Thanks for listening to the Pioneer Made to Grow podcast. I'm Andrew Campbell, ready for a conversation today with two Pioneer reps in Western Canada, talking about something that probably has been talked about by every grower at least a few times over the last decade, and that's the idea of growing corn and soybeans, and in fact, growing more of them across Western Canada. Why have some already started? What's gone right and wrong? And can we get more corn and soybean acres growing in the future? Jack Eyre is from Minto, Manitoba. He's a grower and a Pioneer sales rep with his family business, Southern Seed. And Greg Reese is from Didsbury, Alberta, is a grower and Pioneer sales rep with his business, Riser Seeds. Jake, Greg, thanks for joining the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Happy to be here, Andrew.
So this is an episode that I'm actually really excited to talk about because I think, you know, I'm a grower here in Ontario. Corn and soybeans are an everyday thing my whole life. It's still relatively new for you guys in Western Canada, but there's a lot of work going on and a lot of research going on to change that, to increase those acres for a variety of reasons. So I'm excited to talk about, you know, your experience both in, you know, what you've seen from them and where you think that potential is. But first of all, actually, I'm going to start and maybe we'll kind of start, you know, west to east. Greg, you know, you're in Alberta. Can you tell me a little bit about where you are in Alberta and about your beet seed business?
Yeah, so I'm basically smack dab center between Red Deer, Alberta and Calgary, Alberta. So 45 minutes either way from a major center. Been a Pioneer rep. This will be going into my eighth season. So yeah, it's been exciting. And I can remember when my boss interviewed me for the job. I said, well, what am I expected to sell? And he said, well, canola, of course. And then you got to find the corn acres. And I'm like, where am I going to find corn acres in central Alberta? Because there wasn't a lot to be had in my area. So I think the first year I was a rep, I sold 160 acres of corn. And now we're up, where's the 10,000 acres of Pioneer corn in my territory. So it's been pretty exciting. And I've really enjoyed it. So
and that's big growth, Greg. And so maybe I can kind of, you know, lead into the next question for you as well on this is just, you know, how do you get to 10,000 acres in a short amount of time? Like where did that growth come from? And what kind of convinced some of these growers that corn was right for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, first off, here me 4 or 5 years ago, I was blessed with a pretty good opportunity. Bar Ag Canada is a big Timothy exporter, and they wanted to hit the Dehi corn market, and so, you know, that almost doubled my acres back in the day. But I will say the guys that really made a difference right from the start, Andrew, was the dairy guys. And you know, they really got it dialed in here in this community now to be producing some very excellent corn, high yielding corn, high quality. And we've been blessed with a few good years here for sure. But yeah, it definitely goes back to the dairy side. And I think the beef guys are starting to roll into it a bit here too now and see the benefits of it. It's maybe not, you know, it adds that much more to the pit, but they're starting to see the added value of overall herd health too, just like the dairy guys. So
I do want to kind of come back to some of their experiences in a couple of minutes, Greg, but first I want to, you know, bring you in, Jake. Can you maybe kind of introduce yourself in terms of, you know, you're in Southern Manitoba. Talk a little bit about where you are from and some of your experiences.
Yeah. So again, name is Jake Eyre. I'd be the second generation Pioneer rep. So our agency signed on in 2007. And now it's my father, Andrew, myself, and my sister, Caitlin. So we're kind of unique in that sense that we've gone through, you got both generations in the family. And, you know, you go to some of the training or seminars or meetings and people say, oh, well, I signed up your dad and now I signed up you and your sister. So that's kind of unique. But yeah, so we are agency and we farm ourselves. We do pedigreed seed production. We are in the southwestern part of Manitoba. So people talk about the Red River Valley, which is kind of in and around Winnipeg, central, south central. So that's the part of Manitoba where they just throw seeds on the ground and they pull off, you know, a 200 bushel corn crop. And much like where Andrew is, I'm sure. But yeah, so that's kind of where we are. And we've been growing corn and soy on our farm for 15 kind of plus years now.
So then in that 15 years, and this kind of, you know, leads into, and my experience obviously, you know, is different from yours, but from what I hear from a lot of growers in Western Canada is just a hesitation because, Jake, probably out of those 15 years, it didn't go perfectly every single year. Can you talk a little bit about what your experience is and what keeps you growing corn and soybeans?
So yeah, much like you said, tough to believe in farming. We don't get a perfect year every year. So like I said, we've been growing corn. I can remember when we started, we were growing, oh, I don't know how many heat units it would have been, but like you're talking 79 probably plus day grain corn. So you're talking, you know, 24, 25 heat unit plus, you know. Now we were talking about how Pioneer has like a 69 day and a 1950 heat unit corn. And that's within 10 years. So kind of talking about why we still grow, say starting with the corn is, you know, in that time, we've seen such an investment into the research and development in corn for Western Canada. We've seen the maturity shrink. We've seen the yield increase. We've seen the disease resistance and traits increase. They've, you know, the company has really made an investment into corn, and we've been, you know, we've been told that corn's going to get better. It's going to improve. And kind of year after year, we've noticed an improvement in, you know, both yields, quality, genetics. And like you said, even in a not perfect year like this year, we were under 3 inches of total rain on our farm. And our corn yields, you know, you crunch the numbers, still more profitable than, say, a cash crop like canola. So kind of what's kept us involved and probably others is the continued success and the continued, you know, profitability of corn.
Then Greg, in terms of, you know, because I'm guessing you don't start out with a 79 day corn in central Alberta. You know, what's the variety there and what kind of has kept, as you said, you know, in the 10,000 acres, it's great that they plant it the first year and try it out, but obviously their experience was good in growing it.
Yeah, I know the first year actually with the Barreg project, it was probably one of the poorest years we had as far as the corn being fully developed. We had, you know, we were battling with smoke from forest fires and then it was just a cool summer. And yeah, it never had the proper sunlight. But, you know, I must say, like, those guys really bought into the program. And even in saying that, like, going to the dairy side again is, those guys could still see the added value of corn in their operation, even on a poor year. So it's just that, I think it's getting that mentality shift or mind shift, I guess, in guys. And just, you know, I think rather than having a one and done attitude with stuff, especially something new like corn is, and I will touch on it too, like Barry Schmidt at Barreg, like he did say, it's got to be a 3-year trial, just like anything. So you get a good feel of something. And I think if guys can start having that mentality, especially with new stuff coming, then I think they can see the benefit of doing it.
But Jake, I think the challenge is, you know, for some of this is it also takes, you know, an investment in equipment. You know, it's an investment in even, you know, the fertility is different. Everything is different. How do you bring along, you know, a grower to say, okay, you know, yeah, do all of this stuff because the return's there. How do you bring them along, Jake?
It's probably the first conversation like you had is fertility. That's something that comes up quite often. You know, there's this, I would almost call it a misconception, Andrew and Greg, that, you know, if you're going to grow corn, you need to throw so much money at the fertilizer package for it. Well, we see it in Manitoba, and Greg probably same in Alberta, and, you know, even Saskatchewan. There's a lot of producers that are already throwing quite a meal deal package at, say, like their canola. So, you know, Dad has always said to me, and I still hold it true to this day, that more or less, you know, there's differences, but you're kind of throwing the same package of fertility at your corn that you would your canola, but you're getting the yield wise, you're getting 2.5 times the yield result, right? So that's probably the first conversation we have is kind of trying to talk or educate about the fertility is not, it's not like you're growing, say, something like potatoes, you know, it's it's a little bit different. And as far as the startup cost, you know, I've got that conversation quite a bit of, well, I'm not going to grow corn because I have to dry it. I have to build a dryer. I have to pay for it. Well, I can say, and with an honest truth to this day, we do not have a dryer on our farm. We have dried our corn a couple of times. You know, you can manage it. You can get by without having that significant investment. Or, you know, we are fortunate in our community too. There are neighbors or farms that work together, or we'll do custom drying. But, you know, before those dryers went up, we had a lot of corn that, you know, maybe you come at it in the snow, but also you just waited. It was just a practice. So kind of there are ways around it if you just approach the problem with thinking about a solution.
Well, then Greg, like in terms of, is the same experience for you in Alberta?
Yeah, going to the fertility side, like Jake just touched on, like I remember it was always a conversation, well, you need to have 400 pounds of N at it. And no, you don't. Like, we're not in the Corn Belt in Iowa by any means, but, you know, I think where guys have really seen the benefit, you know, the dairy guy and the beef guy is too, like, if you can get them to come out to field days and stuff. And I think Pioneer does a great job of, you know, getting us reps on board to do those field days so people can have their feet in the dirt and look at it firsthand, even if it isn't on their farm, it's in their direct area, is that, you know, some of the benefits of growing silage corn versus silage barley is it is a manure management tool. Like if you put silage barley down on a field that's loaded heavily with manure versus corn, I would be interested to state that, you know, you're probably leaving two and a half ton of barley silage out there in the field because it's flat as a pancake, where that corn, it's standing and you're getting every bit of it. So,
and your feed value too, Greg, right? Like,
oh yeah,
being a dairy farmer, like you can chime in, your feed value, that if say you've only got a 40 acre spot or 400 or whatever that given area is, if you've, you know, you're trying to maximize your output and your efficiency on that acreage, you can't compare anything to corn silage, right?
No, you can't. And like, I know I got a couple dairy guys too, and they say, you know what, it's not necessarily that my cows milk any better on it, but, you know, and I know this maybe sounds a little stupid, but I believe it's to be true because they spend so much time in the barn. But he says, if we run out of corn silage some years and we end up feeding our cows just barley silage with alfalfa, like, you know, once we're able to introduce that corn back into our TMR, our cows are just happier. And, you know, I've had several guys tell me, like, less mastitis, less foot rot. The list goes on and on and on as far as herd health. And there's money to be made as far as keeping a herd healthy. I mean, it's no different than us as humans. We want to stay as healthy as possible too, right? So why wouldn't we want our cattle herd to stay healthy? So
if I can, I don't want to stop the conversation on corn. I'm just going to shelve it and put a pin in it for a minute because I want to come to soybeans, Jake, because you've got, you know, you said that you've got that experience with soybeans as well. Can we maybe walk through that history as well for a couple of minutes in terms of, you know, what the last decade has looked like in Manitoba as a whole, you know, in the experience and what some of the lessons you've learned in growing them has been?
Yeah, so soybeans was around the same time. Obviously, you know, the history of Pioneer, corn and soybeans kind of go hand in hand, right? So when we signed up as an agent, that's something that's kind of, you know, encouraged, that this is a market we want to grow, and we have a soybean that'll fit on your farm. And yeah, there's, you know, like corn, there's definitely some lean years too, right? You start with, you know, later maturities at that time, you know, start with a Roundup Ready soybean. And then eventually, you know, you get into these new, you know, new chemistries, the Roundup Ready, the Roundup Ready to Extend and List. We started with that. You know, Manitoba, I believe the highest we ever got. So in the province, we're about 8 to 8.5 million seeded acres, give or take the wet or dry year, right? So the highest we ever got was close to around that 2 million acre mark. Kind of been dipping down, going back and forth, but a consistent, you know, shows up in the top 1 to 4 of acreages in the province. Again, we've seen it too. Like we've gone into soybean seed production for Pioneer. Those are the soybeans we grow. So we've been fortunate, you know, the past few years we've been growing them on our farm, but actually it's been kind of unique that some of the varieties, you know, at the time you grow them, and if you buy, you know, a bag of canola, corn, sunflowers, whatever it is, there's a certified seed tag on there. Usually it's a blue tag, right? So on that tag, you'll notice there's a bunch of numbers and there's dates. But if you look for the crop certificate, so the first two digits are the year that crop was grown. The next, I can't remember if it's six or eight digits, are the random grower number that is assigned to that seed grower. And then the last three digits are assigned to the pedigree, whether it's, you know, foundation, registered, certified, whatever, right? So actually, kind of ironically, for the first time last year, so the soybeans that we grew in 2022 on our own farm, pedigreed seed production. So we grew them, they were processed, you know, they were germination tested, they were treated, put back into pro boxes and bags. And then those pro boxes and bags end up in our seed store. And I pulled the tag, it's our seed growing number on there. So I think it's very unique that we've got a company that not only is investing in the genetics and the varieties and the technology, but they're investing in you know, their agents, they're investing in farmers and, you know, kind of that full circle of the technology that we are kind of seeing before it hits commercial scale is truly coming from the local area. It is local data. It is locally tried and tested. And I think probably that was one of the coolest things last year with soybeans I found was, wow, like it really does come full circle and it is kind of going where they say it's going to go.
Well, you talk about that, you know, investment in the research. There's no better place to test 69-day corn than beside you, Greg. You know, so it really is, there's no point in doing it anywhere else. Can you talk a little bit about your experience? Like, you know, you've had it, you know, what's that been like? How often has it been successful for growers in the last 5 or 6 years? And what's kind of the future? What do you need to increase those acres even more?
Well, I guess to increase the acres even more, well, I'll back up a step because you did ask, like, you know, how successful has it been the last 5 years? And I would say, you know, 4 out of the 5 for sure. But even that fifth year, like I said, with the smoke from the forest fires and stuff, there was still success to be had. You know, it maybe wasn't what it was this year or last year. I mean, we definitely pulled some huge numbers this year. But, you know, in saying that, you know, the last 2 years, Pioneer in particular has invested dollars into having two impact sites with local growers here, just in my territory alone, to make that corn even earlier, right? Like, you know, Nicole Rasmussen, who's my agronomist, or for our team, she's our agronomist for our team. And she was even open there a couple of years. If I had a couple customers that wanted to come down to Lethbridge and Tabor and see the impact sites, that she would make a day of it. And I think that was pretty cool of her to do too, because I mean, she's a busy lady, but she took time out of her day. And I remember one of the growers that time, he said, you know, it's great to see this and we appreciate it, but it would sure be nice to see it in our area. And so, Pioneer has made that happen. And I think, you know, it shows their investment to grow a product where they see potential to add business, I think, but also add dollars to the bottom line for farmers too. Right. And, it's like we were talking earlier, you know what, we may not have the prettiest bag on the market, but you know, I think Pioneer's done a good job and this isn't to brag or boast for Jake and myself, but you know, I think they take the time finding the right sales reps and those people to bring those great products forward to farmers. And it's like I said before too, there's more than just seed in that bag. There's a lot of heart in it too. You know, I can speak for myself and for other reps in my territory too. You know, it's not just drop the bag off in the spring and say, here you go. I mean, we probably have our feet in those fields 5 or 6 times a year. And, you know, we're dedicated to those business partners and, you know, they're not customers, they're business partners. You know, they have names, they're not numbers to us. So, you know, I think that's something Pioneer has taught us very well too. You know, a customer or a business partner is a business partner. They aren't just a number. They have a name and, you know, take care of them too. So, and they'll take care of you in return.
Well, Jake, Greg mentions, you know, Nicole as an example of an agronomist. And I know, you know, in our area, it's kind of the same thing. I love having the numbers of of the Pioneer Agronomy team because, you know, they can be useful in just that, you know, I'm thinking this or I'm not sure about what I'm seeing. What are my options? It goes a long way, you know, in terms of, you know, you, Jake, and increasing some of those acres further. I don't know what the potential you think it is for corn and soybeans in Manitoba, but what's the role of the team that sits behind you in helping you achieve that?
Yeah, so kind of been fortunate. Like I grew up on the farm and as I was younger when, you know, we signed on as an agency. So I got to know quite a few names and faces over the years and learn from a whole panel of experts. Probably, you know, one of the most influential in, say, the corn sector in Manitoba. I'm going to throw out a legendary pioneer name. And those who know the company know people in Bob McFadden. If anyone never met Bob, I can remember him coming to our farm and really, you know, talking about corn. They were in Carmen, which, you know, that kind of area, they're getting more heat units than where I am in the southwest. So obviously they're having, you know, better results. And I remember, you know, him kept saying to us and Dad, it's coming. It's coming. Just wait. It's coming. So having that, the top-down approach, you know, our local agronomist in Derwin Hammond, same thing, have his phone number, pick his brain on anything. Or if not, it's, you know what, I'll get back to you on that. I'll see what resources we have either from Ontario or Iowa. I think we're very lucky in that sense that, you know, we work with a company that has data and years of tried and proven history in Canada, but also to our neighbors to the south, because I think, you know, things are different there. But also, yeah, we can learn a whole whack about what they've been doing in those areas where they've been growing corn for way longer than even, say, the likes of Andrew has it in Ontario. Like, it's combining all that years of data and experience to make it work right in Western Canada.
Then Greg, you know, you've talked a lot in terms of, you know, what the silage potential is in corn acres for you. Do you ever think you're going to grow grain corn?
Yes. Yeah. It's not too far off. Like, you know, I can go an hour and a half out of my territory and it is starting up for sure. And I do have full confidence that we'll get there one day and when I say we will get there one day, we will be the first ones to get there too. And I have full confidence in the Pioneer team, you know, like Jake commented, I don't want to say the team behind us. I think it's the team beside us. And that's how they would want to be known too, right? Is that they're there all the time. And, you know, if I wanted to phone Nikki right now, I know I could. And same with my territory manager, they're always good about answering. And, you know, I do believe that we will be the front runner on grain corn in Alberta, hands down. I mean, we are on the silage side, so.
Corn just has a natural fit in Alberta. It's like, you know, cows and mountains and the Oilers being a terrible hockey team. It just all fits in, right?
Well, Calgary's no better.
Well, so it really is, you know, to me, it's exciting to think about what the potential could be, yes. You know, for corn, because when you think about, you know, you mentioned there being, you know, over 8 million acres of kind of farmland, Jake, in Manitoba, like if you add up, you know, everything in Western Canada and what the potential is, and, you know, even if corn and soybeans get, you know, kind of a sliver of that, this is big acres and there are big markets that could be had there. You know, what else needs to happen? If this is going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, you know, what does a grower in Western Canada need to be, you know, thinking about in order to actually, you know, okay, you know what, this might be the right time because the hybrids are coming in, they're right, the market seems to be right. You know, what's that last step that pushes them over the edge that says, you know, the next year or two are the year I'm going to try this. Do you want to start, Jake?
Yeah, I think probably like you talk about, you get variety specific, you know, on say the corn side, you look at, you know, we're going way back now, but I think introduction of like the Acremax, the corn borer, like that was massive for us. Like, you know, silage, it is there. The threat is not as large as say like a grain corn where you could effectively have your cobs on the ground, right? And I have definitely, I've been in some fields with corn borer damage and either, you know, you can see the refuge or a non corn borer tolerant corn, you know, you got cobs on the ground. That's money gone. That's feed value gone, right? So stuff like that, you're kind of seeing the varieties are, they're keeping up with stuff like that. The herbicide traits, that's been a big thing too. Like I'm excited for, and I think we're a few years off yet with the hybrids, but I look to Manitoba, enlist corn. Like for us, in Manitoba, my part and most of the province, Greg, I don't know if you guys deal with it, but kochia is a lot
of starting
bane of a lot of people's existence. And, you know, quite honestly, there's a high percentage of it that is glyphosate resistant or tolerant even. So, you know, having another, a tool in the tool belt to deal with that. And we're also seeing that too in the soybeans. I know too, excited about transitioning over the Enlist soybeans too. So having that option there too. But I think what needs to happen next, and I think we're kind of already doing it by default, is just telling our story, not necessarily educating, but just having an honest, frank conversation. I had a customer come in today and we were just talking this and that and whatever. And then they pull out the paper or photo of the paper and they said, yeah, I was looking at your corn trials. And I never even brought it up. And they said, that's really interesting. And then they started asking me about a hybrid. And, you know, was that the same hybrid that you, yeah, we put that in the northwest corner of your big field there. Yeah, really liked it. And I said, well, I'm glad you asked me about this. So just having, you know, it is an education, but I think it's not, and Greg, we kind of talked about it. It's not, you know, preaching from the seller's box. It's having those conversations about, yeah, this is kind of what happens. It's not like we talked about earlier, the fertilizer, the misconception. It's, you know, there's a lot of info out there and we're more than happy, you know, our agency and everyone else involved in the system, we're more than happy to walk you guys through it. You know, at the end of the day, like Greg said, it's a business partnership, you know.
Then Greg, like same for you, you've got, you know, a lot of growth potential, obviously, when you think about, you know, what the acres could look like in a region like yours. You know, what else does a grower need to just kind of get over that, you know, kind of last bit of hesitation to put, you know, corn in?
Oh, well, I think if you're going to talk about, you know, corn shifting to going to the grain side, is it's that machinery cost. And like I said, the last 2 years here in particular at home, like I said, if you had a little bit of brass and patience, you could have combined 6909 here. Like we just had snow here the other day and like, you know, being this open of a fall, you could easily combine it. So, you know, there's that added cost to machinery, but like we talked earlier off air, like, you know what, you don't have to go and spend on a $100,000 corn planter. Like when I started 8 years ago, there was two corn planters in my whole territory. And now I think I counted the other day and there's 19. So, you know, and there's not high end corn planters by any means, but they just kind of tick along. And that's what I think, again, it's like Jake just said, tell the story. You know what? You don't need to spend oodles on a corn planter to maybe start doing a quarter section at a time, or, you know, maybe buy one with a neighbor, you know, to start out with. And I think that's, you know, maybe mitigate the risk, I guess, a little bit up front. But I think, you know, once the grain corn really takes off here, like I'm afraid we won't be able to keep it on the shelves, honestly, because I think guys are just looking for that next thing to be part of their rotation. And I think honestly, like telling the Pioneer story, I think guys are actually excited and waiting for it already. So, but, and I'm sorry, Jake, I had to chuckle. Your agronomist must be not as mean as mine, because if I say cob, I get smacked in the back of the head. I'm only allowed to call it an ear.
Oh. Yeah, it's probably a regional thing. It's like when Andrew calls it a roof, you know.
I can't. My Southern Ontario side can't help it, Jake. So, but you know what, guys, this has been a really fun conversation. I think, you know, as I said off the top, this is exciting to think about what the potential could be. You know, for, you know, the growth of these crops. And as you said, Greg, you know, adding another crop to rotation, just it's not necessarily about having, you know, one, you know, thing that fixes everything, but just another tool in the toolbox to lead to a more profitable operation. So Greg, Jake, thanks very much for joining the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having us. I enjoyed the opportunity. So
Thank you so much, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
Next time on the Pioneer Made to Grow podcast, we do our annual look back over the past growing season, this time with a national approach. Bringing in team members from the Western and Eastern Canadian agronomy teams, we'll take a look at what went well, what we can do better, and most importantly, what we can think about going into 2024 to improve profitability. That's next time. On behalf of the entire team working behind the scenes on this show, we appreciate you listening. If you haven't already, you can always check out our past episodes of the show in apps like Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. We're even on YouTube with new video episodes. You can follow Pioneer Seeds on Twitter at the handle PioneerSeedsCA or my personal handle Fresh Air Farmer. And don't forget, if you're ever looking for more information or advice, just ask your local Pioneer rep or visit pioneer.com/Canada.